Welcome to the Aerospace Advantage podcast. I'm your host, John Slickbaum, and today we're discussing the F-35 Lightning II and the value it's presenting to our allied forces and with the pilots who fly it. A core facet of the F-35's design from day one involves seamless integration with our partners. It was always about bringing the advantages of fifth-gen combat air power to the team. History has proven that nations don't engage in large-scale warfare in a vacuum. So the way we all build and employ our air power capabilities needs to reflect that. And that is by eight nations: the United States, the United Kingdom, Italy, Denmark, the Netherlands, Australia, Norway, and Canada embarked on designing a fifth generation fighter that was designed, manufactured, and fielded with joint and coalition employment in mind. And this was a big change. Types like the F-22 took an opposite approach. Their systems architecture made foreign sales nearly impossible, even though the demand existed. Leaders learned from this and knew they had to change the game. Additionally, as you know, the focus for a common shared approach also extended across the U.S. and its three services, the Air Force, Navy, and Marine Corps. They collaborated to field the overarching capability of the jet with three specific variants to meet each service's needs. This meant vertical takeoff and landing for the Marines, increased wing area and gear for the Navy's use on an aircraft carrier, and a variant optimized for land bases for the Air Force. The international partners had the option of procuring any of these three variants, picking whichever model best suits their operational requirements. Well, this plan wouldn't evolve over the years without its share of criticisms or challenges. The F-35 has had its fair share of pushback over the years, but one thing is for certain, this jet is a game changer. On a previous discussion regarding the F-35, current Lightning pilot Jason Hazard Lee said, if the F-16 were developed in an age of social media, it wouldn't have lasted a few months. And he's right, because people forget that the early days of the F-16 saw its fair share of challenges, crashes, and unfortunately, fatalities. But it did become one of the most successful and proliferated fighters in history. Our coalition partners saw the value of the Viper, and they trained their forces and employed this aircraft alongside America in nearly every single conflict since its operational debut. And that's what we're here to discuss today. The F-35 Lightning II will follow in the footsteps of other multi-role aircraft that will integrate across the services and the globe as the first and only fifth-generation aircraft designed with a coalition mindset. The F-35 is fully operational and has been delivered to air forces around the world. We'll be talking to the pilots and the instructors who are flying and training in their respective forces in Europe. The United Kingdom, Italy, and the Netherlands are here with us today to talk about their new baby, the F-35. All right, so joining me for today's discussion is Lieutenant Colonel G.B. Razor Van Worden from the Netherlands, and he's coming to us from Luik Air Force Base. Razor, welcome, and tell us a little bit about yourself, and I'd love to hear about your flying background.
Hey, Slick. Thanks for hosting me. So I'm Lieutenant Colonel Van Worden. I go by Razor. I joined the Air Force at 18 years old, so that's a while ago, in 1998. Did the Royal Military Academy in the Netherlands for 4 years, and then went to pilot training in Shepherd, Texas, where I learned to fly on the mighty T-37, T-38, got my pilot wings. Then I was fortunate to be sent to Tucson, Arizona for my basic F-16 training. And I went back to the Netherlands to do the theater qualification training, mission qualification training, and then just be a young wingman at the squadron at Leeward Air Base, where I did my two-ship flight lead upgrade, four-ship flight lead upgrade, mission commander, and eventually was an instructor at our weapons school. Did that, became a director of operations, did a short staff tour at our Air Force staff in Breda. And then eventually in 2018, I was lucky enough to be sent here as the first initial cadre for the F-35 for the training environment. Now I'm currently, after the transition course and instructor pilot upgrade on F-35, I'm a full-time instructor as well as the senior national representative at the Luik Air Force Base for the Dutch.
Razor, it's an incredible career. Thank you so much for sharing with us, and congratulations on all your personal success.
Thank you.
We also have Squadron Leader Stuart Campbell from the Royal Air Force with us. Stu, welcome to the show, and I'd love to hear a quick introduction as well.
Hey, Slick. Thanks so much for having me on. So I'm Squadron Leader Stu Campbell, 617 Squadron of the Dambusters, and I'm the Executive Officer in the squadron. So I joined the Air Force after university. My first tour, the Air Force did what we refer to as being creamed off. So I was selected to be an instructor straight out of training, taught basic fast jet training, then went to fly the Tornado GR4 on 617 Squadron, and had a phenomenal time there doing that. From there to the Red Arrows, to the aerobatic display team, then short tour in staff, and then I was incredibly fortunate to find my way to F-35, and then back to 617 Squadron, which between the time I had left, it had disbanded and then stood back up again as F-35. So I'm very proud to be the first person who has flown on 617 Squadron as a Tornado pilot and then again as F-35.
Stu, that's absolutely incredible. Congratulations on everything. And Stu, do you know what's next?
I don't actually know what's next. I'm probably about 12 months out from leaving the squadron, which will be a very sad day. But hopefully something exciting again and something interesting and almost certainly something to do with F-35.
And finally, we have Lieutenant Colonel Maurizio Driver de Guida from the Italian Air Force.
Hello. Hello, everybody. I'm Maurizio de Guida, Lieutenant Colonel in the Air Force, in the military since 95. Air Force Academy, Shepherd Air Force Base pilot training. Got my wings 2004, back to Amendola flying AMX. Again in US as an exchange pilot on A-10Cs until 2012, and back to Italy as a DO in a fighter squadron in the northern part of Italy. And then assigned to the F-35 program, one of the first pilots to fly the jet, first squadron commander in the F-35 here in Italy, and just left the squadron a couple of years ago, now in the headquarters.
Well, Driver, you have an incredible story, and you know, we have chatted before, and I'm really thankful for the time that I got to spend in Italy flying with the Triple Nickel Fighter Squadron. And of course, flying in Italy is what I think is every fighter pilot's dream. So it's a pleasure to have you here today and talk about the F-35. Well, I really appreciate you guys being here on the Aerospace Advantage. And I tell you, what's really incredible is the fact that we are spanning time zones from Luke Air Force Base to the east coast of the U.S., Italy, and all the way over to Cyprus where Stu is. So, well, Stu, I just want to ask you that you're flying out there with your squadron on an active cruise, and we just want to know what it means at the squadron level to have the international partnership behind the F-35.
Yeah, it means like the international operability is fundamental to how we want to employ F-35. So whether we're back at home in training with our USAFE colleagues just down the road in Lakenheath, or indeed with Razor and our Dutch colleagues across in the North Sea, or what we've been doing over the last 8 weeks or so is been taking F-35 around Europe and really testing out that interoperability. So we flew in France just a couple of weeks ago with four US Marine F-35s, four UK F-35s, and eight USAF F-35s who are in detachment near Bordeaux. So 16 ship all in Maddle fighting together. We then moved that with the carrier that we're deployed on into the Mediterranean. We flew with Italians, again, at least eight of us, all up in the net. And then indeed took that even further and flew with the Israelis as well. So it's utterly fundamental to how we train and how we intend to fight if we need to.
Yeah, Stu, that's incredible. Now, Razor, I want to hear your perspective on the international piece from the Netherlands side of the house.
Yeah, of course. So I'm here currently an instructor pilot at Luke Air Force Base. And at Luke Air Force Base, there's something called a pilot training center. It's close to 7 years old now. And this is truly where all the allies and the partners come together for the basic flying training, right? So we have obviously the Americans here, the Australians were here. They left, unfortunately, last December. We've had Israelis, Japanese, and Korean pilots being trained here. They left as well. But currently we have, in our squadron, American, Dutch, and Danish pilots, both instructor and student pilots. And in other squadrons, we have Italians and Norwegians. So it's just interesting to see, for us in the squadron, at least, we fly each other's jets. We fly with each other. So you can have a I could be in a Dutch instructor pilot flying an American jet with a Danish wingman flying an American jet or a Dutch jet and an American colleague flying on one of our jets as well. So that truly shows the integration we have. And there's no way to tell what jet you're flying unless you look at what kind of crew chief you have, because our jets are being maintained by Lockheed Martin. Obviously, the U.S. jets are being maintained by active duty. So that's a nice way of seeing how it all comes together and all the partners are working closely together to train the pilots to become basic mission ready after leaving Luke.
Yeah, Razor, what you're talking about with the international training piece is just incredibly valuable. And, you know, we talked about the F-35 being an 8-partner nation program, you know, obviously to develop the airplane, but we are also selling the airplane with our foreign national partners. I appreciate you bringing up that training as well. And I'd like to get Driver in on this part of the conversation because, Driver, you and I have spoken about what it's like to train and integrate across forces, and you have a unique experience being an Italian pilot who has done an exchange tour with the United States Air Force flying the A-10, and of course being one of the first F-35 pilots. So with your experience as an AMX pilot, an A-10 pilot, and now flying the F-35, what does the F-35 bring to the fight that the previous fourth generation fighters that you've flown simply can't do?
You went directly to the most difficult question, Slick. I could answer in a couple of seconds or in a couple of hours. I will try to be short. But I will not go through things that you can easily find on Wikipedia as a stealth capability, advanced data links, high performance, next generation sensors. I'll try to give you an insight as pilot, focusing on the effects that these tools can generate to answer your question about fifth generation. What does it bring to the battlefield? I think that information by itself is important, but it's even more important to use that information at the right moment in the right place. And that's the biggest advantage that F-35 can bring. It's a new level of situational awareness that has never been achieved before. And F-35 pilots basically have that information available at the proper time, at the proper place, and where is the most important, at the point of the attack, at the core, at the heart of the adversary. So you can use it to make proper decision at the proper time. That's, I think, is the next generation that F-35 can bring to the battlefield that previous four-gen fighters cannot.
Yeah, Driver, it's such a great point. And I do appreciate you skipping over the stuff that's readily available on the internet and stuff that our audience may already know. And you're right, I think we're really talking about the pilot-to-pilot information and how that information is being brought to you, because the jet is now extrapolating data and putting it together, making your decision-making capability that much faster and more efficient. So I really appreciate you sharing that. Now, Stu, I want to hop over and ask you a question, and I really just want to dive into it, because we know the F-35 has such incredible capabilities, but how do you answer the debate for the need for fifth gen, especially from a UK or an international perspective?
I mean, in very simple terms, like our adversaries have fifth gen, so we have to have it. So that is a fundamental answer. But then at a more kind of tactical level, what fifth gen fighters bring is a completely unique capability. It's survivability into complex surface air threats, which fourth gen just cannot survive in, which may lead us down small package events or missions, or perhaps the big event which we're always trained for, in which we'll fight with fourth gen, and where our strength really comes to fore is where we fight with fourth gen. So fourth gen bringing the significant amount of weapons that we all know they carry, and then fifth gen bringing that situational awareness to the fight, being able to command it and cross target between nations, between fourth gen, between fifth gen, and ultimately just increase that combat mass and specifically the situational awareness of the battlefield.
Stu, it's a great point. Now, I want to tie together what all three of you have been talking about And it really boils down to communication and information sharing in the airplane. So it's the airplane gathering data to the pilot, and then the pilot interpreting the data. That's great, but then also sharing the information back and forth. And Razor, you and I talked to what we thought was a big barrier, but it seems like the jets are talking to each other from an international perspective great. And, you know, Stu mentioned having fourth gen out there in the fight as well. So just like to hear about how you think this integration works, because it is such a game changer, especially coming from your experience in the F-16.
Yeah, the F-35 is totally a game changer. The amount of situational awareness we have is tremendous, but it all depends on how you share that information. Obviously, you can do that by legacy voice, but we prefer to use data links. We have a specific F-35 advanced data link called MADL. And obviously, we have the legacy Link 16 platform. And as long as you use the same encryption keys, the crypto, everything should work fine. So, and that's what we're currently doing at Luke. We all use the same crypto. So no matter what jet you fly, you should be able to connect to each other. And what you see is what you relay to your buddies in other metal groups, is what they're called. And they should be able to share and see that information. And the same thing goes for communication. We can make the communications encrypted as well. So everyone speaks on the same radio with the same crypto, and we hear and see what all the other buddies see, and that's the way you share information and eventually lethality and situational awareness.
So, Driver, what's your view on this issue?
Yeah, obviously, all these capabilities, they come with a price tag. So fifth generation aircraft, they bring value to the battlefield. If they are able to work and cooperate together, also with fourth generation legacy assets and other joint forces. So we should never forget that the majority of players out there are not F-35 today and not even tomorrow. So we need to be able to talk to each other, also from a technical standpoint, the so-called interoperability, which is an issue. And it comes with some effort. The first time I saw the list of crypto keys that were required to make it properly work, I scared myself.
Sure, yeah.
It was not a simple list of few crypto keys required. It was a so long list, the majority of which of those keys, I never heard the name before. So that is something that requires some time to tackle, but I think we are a good point, because as long as we acknowledge that all these tactical data link are complicated, the architecture, the protocols of writing messages, sharing messages, how the software updates, they have a direct impact on your capability to be interoperable with other players. The good news is the interoperability among F-35 has made some giant steps. Let me tell you, a few weeks ago, I was in Sardinia, where Italy is putting a lot of effort on a national program, which is the operational training infrastructures. And we can talk a little bit about that if you want later, but the question is, we need advanced and modern training, and we wanna provide this modern training to F-35, not as a single service or a single nation, but as a community. I was sitting on the ground, I was behind the desk, acting as Red Forces to be fifth generation tactics aware and give hard time to those guys. And I could tell how impressive they were when you see on your screen 50, 60 jets, 25 of those are F-35, and they are pushing everybody back, and I'm one of their target because I know they are sharing real time some important data, crucial data. And I could tell from my experience, if somebody was connected to the model, the data link, the proper data link of the F-35, or it had technical issues with keys. And so I think those connection issues have been worked out, because it's a complicated story, but we are at a great point. And so we are doing well.
Yeah, it's incredible. You know, I experienced the growing pains in the F-16. I started, you know, before we had Link 16, And then after we had it, just trying to get your own squadron on the same crypto keys so that the airplanes could talk together in the beginning was a huge thing to learn. And then you deploy to an exercise, and now you have multiple squadrons. You know, you might deal with that issue a little bit. But the fact that we're doing it multinationally at Luke and in Italy, it's a telltale sign of, you know, how much we've learned and how important this stuff is to work together internationally. So, Stu, I wanted to hear your perspective on this with information sharing and, of course, sharing of intel and that type of thing. Do you see this as a growing pain, or are there any other issues that we may need to be thinking about now so that we can integrate better in the future?
I think it's a growing pain, Slick, that we've already got over, to be honest. So in our cruise so far, we're 2 months into a seven-month deployment, and we fly every single day with US Marine Corps in the using the same crypto and being able to speak in MADL, see them on MADL. We have flown with, as I said before, with USAF, with Italians, with Israelis, all fully up. So it's a complex problem to make sure that everybody is, you know, sharing that correct crypto, but when the right guys are behind it and have the right numbers fed into the jet, it works so well. It's great.
Now, Driver, one of the things that I remember from our previous conversations is you made it really clear how Italy and the Italian Air Force have embraced the F-35, and it is truly operational, and the squadrons are full up. But it's not just from a flying standpoint. The maintenance and logistics are full up, and the fact that you guys produce parts, assemble the F-35 in Italy, and have complete depot-level maintenance capability is really, really huge for the state of the program. So what does this really mean to you since you've been there the whole time?
Well, Slick, when you enter the fighter squadron, there is a sentence that somebody imagined the future, somebody else lives the future. Actually, thanks for putting me as one of the pilots that first flew the F-35, but I think that today's results are proving a great Air Force vision already 15, 20 years ago, where strategic choices were made at that time, and we entered the F-35 program as partners. We invested as an Air Force and as a country a lot on F-35 enterprise. So that's why today we have so many firsts, results that we are obviously proud, and for us, for our Air Force, F-35 so far is a successful story. We started with the first vehicles assembled in Italy in early 2014, first flight in 2015, bringing the first Atlantic flight to bring the jets in US, and then the first outside the continental United States country to fly the jet in Italy in 2016. And we started the very fast development of F-35 capability inside the Air Force, becoming the first initial operational, achieving the first initial operational capability in 2018. Actually, as we speak, we have jets that are in Estonia, and this is the first deployment of F-35 within NATO, first two being in Iceland in 2019. So yes, it's a long story, it's a successful story. We embraced the fifth generation transformation effort inside the Air Force.
Yeah, it is really unbelievable what you all have done in Italy, and you've really been leading the program in Europe, which is super exciting. So after you get fifth gen, you've got to train in it. And one of the things I wanted to ask you guys about was the fifth gen training requirements and basically how fifth generation changes your training requirements. And I really want to know what you think is going to be the best way to leverage the international partners to achieve a vision that the international program was based on. So we'll start with you, Stu.
So fundamentally, the way that the situational awareness the jet gives you makes you so much safer and so much more aware than we ever were in fourth gen fighters. And suddenly large scale exercises and ultimately large scale combat becomes far easier for even a junior wingman to deal with. So we train our guys from very early on to be a minimum of a four ship or a division. And then that then transfers through onto the front line from what we're doing every day into really prioritizing large force exercises as much as possible. It really is where F-35 comes to the fore, especially, as I mentioned before, that integration with fourth gen, just to increase that combat mass, bring the situational awareness to fourth gen, employ their weapons first, and control the fight. So, and that's all brought by our sensors. The way we train cross-nation is also phenomenal, which makes us all kind of, we all train and then ultimately then fight from the same songbook, so to speak. And where that I have seen that come to the fore just in the deployment we're on right now with the US Marine Corps is we will at times, if we were to fly an 8-ship, so for UK, for US, for US Marine Corps, take a kneeboard card from the US squadron. And if one of their guys fell out, we would just slot forward and the UK guy would be -2, -3, -4 and fight just as the US Marine Corps pilot would. So that cross-nation training and then ultimately employment is fundamental to our aircraft.
Awesome. Well, Razor, do you mind to hop in here and share some thoughts on that?
Yeah, sure. So the way that fifth gen changes the requirements for training is a little background. Obviously, most European countries bought the F-35 as a replacement for the F-16. And we bought it because we need an airplane which is more survivable in a super lethal environment. So that's what we did. And therefore, you need to change the way you train to that as well. For example, for air-to-air missions, it was common in F-16 to do 2v1, 2v2, maybe a 4v2. And now, as an indication, the very first tactical intercept air-to-air sortie that mostly our students do is a 2v4. So two Blue Air F-35 versus four enemy aircraft. And that's the baseline. And that's mostly driven just to challenge the pilots enough to get the training, because otherwise it's just not challenging enough. So we train to overwhelming red air enemy forces, and they are still super capable of doing that. And the same thing goes for the surface threat. The F-35 is built as an offensive counter air platform, built for suppression of many enemy air defenses. So we'd like to train through those as well, you know, future or modern surface air missile systems. And that's a challenge I feel that's at least in Europe the case. In legacy platforms, we never train to that. So there's no ranges for that. There's no surface to air emitters where we can train to. And there's ways to go around that with embedded virtual training, if you will, that so it's displayed in a cockpit, but it's not really there. But to truly test and train to all the capabilities of the jets we have, we need true emitters. And that's something I know there's the programs going forward to get that going into Europe, but that's where we're truly relying on integration and partners where we work together to build and use emitters simultaneously, mostly in Europe, because that's a challenge.
Yeah, well, as a former Wild Weasel, I definitely would rather do a seed mission in an F-35 than the F-16.
Yeah.
I can tell you that much. So now, Driver, I hear Italy really has been making strides in F-35 training, and you all just recently wrapped up your Falcon Strike training a few weeks ago. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you and the Italian Air Force are doing with F-35 training?
Thanks for this question, because it gives me a great opportunity. Usually when you get a new jet, you fit the jet into your Air Force. So you adapt it to your requirements from a logistics standpoint, tactical employment, and you use it. You learn to use that new jet. We did the opposite. We adapted our Air Force to the fifth generation requirement. There were so many implications from a doctrinal, organizational, training, infrastructure, security, that required a mindset shifting. And that reflects today's context. We all know that the speed of change of things around us, we are always in crisis that we need to monitor, and that has an impact on the military structure itself. So it requires agility. I think the F-35 has taught us to be more agile, to be more responsive to the new situations. Fifth generation transformation of the Air Force is not just a slogan. We are going through a never-ending cycle, which is going faster and faster across all spectrum of security, cyber, cross-domain, data link, networking, info sharing, and you can name it. But if I had to summarize, that would be mainly three lines of effort. One is a mindset and advanced training. The second one is connectivity, interoperability. We talked a little bit about that. And the third is security and resilience. You asked me about the training. I realized very soon that the way I trained before being an F-35 pilot was not suitable for F-35 capability. So we had to change the way we train our pilots, starting from baby pilots, from when they get their wings and they do the introduction to fighter fundamental. So we changed the syllabi and we invested in our national schools. As a matter of fact, in next year, we are the Air Force is starting a new business with the International Flying Training School in Sardinia to do advanced training for pilots that are going to be flying Eurofighters and F-35. And they will be training there on T-346 in Sardinia airspace, so they can take advantage of all the infrastructures and the infrastructures for training purposes that are available there. We recognized very soon that it's not only about changing the size of the airspace, which is something important. We need airspace that is 200 miles by 100, 150 miles, which is a huge portion of airspace to employ those fifth gen capabilities. But it's not only about that. It's about having a complex environment that reflects the complexity of the operational scenarios that will be tomorrow's conflict challenge. We need high value training, we call it fifth gen training, available to our pilots. We need to train them to face and manage the complexity, which is not easy task. I always say that F-35, it's absolutely easy to fly for basic flying. It's very difficult to employ because it requires some decision making to the lowest level, the pilot in the cockpit. But it's almost impossible to train well because you cannot fool the jet, right? So you need a high fidelity threat, you need a high density of threat, a threat behavior that replicates the complex environment out there. And that is another big issues that we are facing and we are learning to manage. Falcon strike exercise a couple of weeks ago has been the first F-35 community that reflects that intent. I mentioned before, 25 jets altogether facing other 70 contacts. We've flown in few days, 1,200 hours, 450 air refueling contacts with so many surface-to-air missiles in a very strong integrated air defense. It was so cool. I was so jealous looking at the guys that were flying out there.
Well, I'm jealous hearing about it for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, gentlemen, we're starting to run short on time, but I cannot let you off the hook without a flying story. So I know the audience would love to hear a There I Was story from the cockpit of the F-35. And of course, having the international viewpoint is really important. So let's get started with you, Razor.
All right, cool flying story. It's not so much a story about me, but it's more the experience I have here. So last August 2020, with our very first basic course, young lieutenants coming in from Shepard and all of the U.S. Training bases come through through the 308 Fighter Squadron. And what was amazing to me to see in a 9-month course is how those dudes grew tremendously in airplane. We took them on the very first rides where we chase them around, right? Another F-35. There's rarely any guidance or techniques or instructional you have to do because they're trained so well and the simulator's academic. And then 9 months later, you fly 8-ship large force exercise with them, and they're they're more lethal than we were ever were in the F-16. So that's amazing to see how they grow and they are able to employ that thing as a weapon in combat after only 9 months of training. And that was truly humbling. And I was super proud of those guys, both Dutch and American. So that was fun to see.
Yeah, Razor, it's absolutely incredible. And one of the things that we don't talk about too often is the fact that there are no two-seat F-35s. For me as an F-16 guy, it's pretty crazy. Where I think about my pilot training, you know, flying the T-37, T-38, and then showing up to Luke and having six or seven flights in a two-seater with an instructor in the back seat yelling at me about my takeoffs, landings, and instruments. So you guys really skip all that with the fact that using advanced academics, the simulators, and then boom, you're off to the races chasing a student on their first flight, which is a solo, which is really awesome. So, Stu, I want to shift over to you. Let's hear a good flying story.
I wish I had a phenomenal flying story. I guess one of the things that I will always remember is the first time I flew with F-35. And like you, Slick, I was very lucky to be in our national display team, the Red Arrows, when you were obviously in the Thunderbirds. And back in 20, I think it was 15, it might have been 16, one of the F-35s flew all the way across from Beaufort to take part in the Royal International Air Institute in the UK. And we got to fly with that F-35 across in front of all the crowds. And I remember being down the back and looking across at this thing and thinking it just looked like a spaceship to me. At the time, I didn't think I was going to end up flying it. It was just this most incredible platform. And I didn't understand it, but it just looked phenomenal. Fast forward a few years and I'm incredibly lucky to now be sat in that cockpit and experiencing everything it can do. And then to just touch on a little bit what Razor mentioned and you also mentioned as well about the lack of single seat. Of course, we are a joint force in the UK. So we are 60% RAF and 40% Royal Navy, roughly, give or take a few percent. So as such, we all fly off the carrier, whether you're Air Force or whether you're Navy, we do it together. So not only do we fly the aircraft for the first time, but we on our own with no twin seat, but you land onto carrier by day and by night, absolutely on your own. And it is just testament to how good the simulators are and how good the training is, and also how phenomenal the aircraft is, how it looks after you, to be able to just do that with confidence and very, very few nerves considering what you're being asked to do. I'll never forget landing on the boat for the first time 20 years into my career, and here I am landing on a boat in the sea, but with very little nerves because of this training.
Yeah, that is absolutely incredible. And Stu, I've got to ask, what is morale like? Because it has to be an incredible time to be on an operational cruise. Squadron life has to be amazing right now.
It is absolutely phenomenal. Morale is through the roof. There's no denying, and I think it's well known that when nations start up any combat air platform and probably helicopters or multi-engine would be much the same. They go through their testing phases where people don't fly too much, et cetera, et cetera. But we have well and truly broken through that glass ceiling and are flying loads. The team are really tight. We get on like a house on fire. And to be honest, it feels just like being back in the Red Arrows, you know, that kind of really close-knit family. And it's great. We have 5 months to go. And it's going to be a hoot.
Awesome. All right, driver, you're up. Give us a F-35 flying story.
So I'm going to actually go with a story, which is not a war story, but it's a funny story when I think about. And there I was bringing the first jet to Amanda on day one. Well, maybe some of our listeners don't know that the jet needs to recognize the pilot to be the right pilot and the proper pilot. So one of the crypto keys is a pin, like the one that you put on a smartphone. Well, I was given the wrong pin, so the jet was not recognizing me. Well, today you cannot fly the jet without doing the pinning. At that time, I was asking, well, what do I lose? And some engineers told me what I was losing. So the first jet that was brought to Amendola was flown without a pin by me. And that was definitely a worse story, but it would be a secret story. So it was just a challenging flight to fly a jet that doesn't like you because it doesn't think you are the right pilot. So that is something that every once in a while I think about.
Well, what a great story. I mean, I see that as a testament to the security and the technology that's in the airplane. And obviously, they've thought about everything to include having the wrong person in the airplane trying to access capabilities that the airplane has. So you definitely need to make sure that all that is protected. I really appreciate that story a lot, Driver.
Thank you.
All right, I'm just going to open it up for a second if there's any parting shots.
I want to share something, and you can use it or skip it or cut it, do whatever you want. Basically, F-35 for Italy is a successful story, and it's very easy to celebrate successful stories. I think the thing I'm the most proud of is that we are not celebrating this story. We are taking this challenge, and every day we keep focusing on what we can do better to remain on the leading edge of fifth generation. That's something that I'm really proud of, my entire organization. It took the challenge, and we are not just celebrating a successful story. We just want to be on the leading edge. We want to move faster and forward on this track.
All right. Well, of course, I just want to say thank you to all three of you for being here today. I really appreciate your time. Razor, thanks. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Slick. It was a pleasure.
Stu, thanks again. We're going to be flight tracking you to see where you go next.
Yeah, indeed. Slick, thanks so much. Thanks for inviting me along.
And Driver, thanks so much for being here. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Slick.
With that, I'd like to extend a big thank you to you, our listeners, for your continued support and for tuning into today's show. If you like what you've heard today, don't forget to hammer down on that like button and follow or subscribe to the Aerospace Advantage. You can also leave a comment for us to let us know what you think about our show or areas you would like to hear more about. As always, you can join in on the conversation by following the Mitchell Institute on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn. And you can always find us at MitchellAerospacePower.org. Until next time, this is John Slickbaum. Stay safe and check six.